Turundusraadio .
Hello dear listeners and welcome to our marketing radio talk show number 115. My name is Anu Malnarits. I'm your host today from Marketing Institute in Estonia. And my guest via Skype is Kristiina Magnusson, who is Global Sponsorship Director at Volvo Trucks. Hello, Kristiina.
Hello. Hi.
Turunduse tulejoonel.
Our main topic today is about global sponsorship strategy. Mm-hmm. And we here have talked several times about different ways of sponsorship in our marketing radio talk show. But today we are focusing on more global approach on sponsorship. And Kristiina, you from Volvo Trucks, you are representing a company that is behind one of the biggest ocean race, Volvo Ocean Race. I know, think that most of Estonians know it as well. You are behind the company and you are also behind the race. And now we have a good opportunity to ask several questions about the global sponsorship strategically. How does it work and what should we learn from you?
Yes.
And I want to start from the beginning. You started directing Volvo sponsorship team for about 10 years ago. Was it your choice to start sponsorship of the big show like Volvo Ocean Race, or was it decided before you arrived?
Well, it actually was decided in 1997 when they had been looking at the Volvo Group and Volvo Cars were looking, when we were all one company, wanted to change direction a bit. We had been sponsoring horse jumping in the World Cup for 20 years, between 78 and 98, and people felt that perhaps the return on investment had reached its maximum. And we'd also been involved in tennis, golf, and we are still involved in golf, skiing, some skiing events, and also motorsports. We were looking at doing something different, something that our competitors weren't doing, and something that was also global. And that's really how it came about when our eyes turned to the Wheat Bread Round the World race. And in fact, in 1997-98, that was the first time Wheat Bread sailed under the Volvo flag, so to speak. It was called Wheat Bread Round the World race for the Volvo Trophy.
Okay.
And then in 2001, it became the Volvo Ocean Race.
Okay. So you... were connected to the company at that time?
Oh, yes. I actually worked in Australia then. So in 97, I got to look after the two stopovers that were in Australia then, one in Fremantle and one in Sydney. And that's how I got on board the Volvo Ocean Race, so to speak, and was recruited back to Sweden in year 2000 to work with the race.
Was the competitiveness just the only factor that counted at that time? Or were there any other factors that also were important when the race was chosen?
There were a lot of factors there. I mean, we were looking for something that would develop the emotional aspects of our brand, also in the field of business to business. I mean, we have a challenge having several different types of products in our portfolio. I mean, Volvo Cars is a consumer brand, Volvo Construction Equipment and Volvo Trucks are business to business, of course, as are buses. And at that time, we also had Volvo Aero and Volvo Penta, which we still have. So we had a lot of different aspects to look at. But the fact that it was global was very important because we operate in 140 countries around the world. It had to be a sport that we believed in and could develop. But also the fact that it lasted for 9 months, that gave us a lot of opportunities to market the race and to participate with our customers in many different ways over a long time. I think that was one of the major factors.
Very good. Tell me, how can you from Volvo Trucks maximize the results for your company from business to business point of view?
We use it as a platform for relationship creation, if you like. I mean, our most important activity is to have customers attend the event. Many of them actually buy their own trips to come to the event and do it over and over again. So it's a platform where they can meet us in a different way than if in a normal business world, but also where they can meet their colleagues and people, other people who operate transport companies. And that part, I think they find very interesting as well. So for us, for Volvo Trucks, it's the major thing is a meeting platform.
How do you measure the results? Do you count the amount of clients who visit the events every year? Or what are the most important measurements for you?
Yes, we know exactly who's coming, of course, how many people are there. And Volvo Trucks is the one company that utilizes the event the most in terms of invited customers. We have a lot of surveys, actually. One just came today, and that was about how happy our visitors were with, for instance, the exhibition and the programs we had, the business-related programs, the hotels and food and everything like that. But it is quite difficult to measure exactly how many trucks people buy from a trip like that. We always get the comment that they want to come back, and some people will ask us, when is the next Volvo Ocean Race so we can buy another truck, you know, to be able to come? Or how many trucks do I need to buy to be able to sail more than the stops and things like that? But of course, you don't buy trucks for the fun of it. You buy it because you need it. And of course, our aim is to have them choose Volvo instead of anybody else. And I think they do. We do. I think you had, as I said, it's very difficult to measure exactly, but we do have a Volvo Ocean Race special edition that we have now had in every race so far. And for instance, we sold this time over 1,000 units of this truck. So that means that people want to have a Volvo Ocean Race edition where they can use it maybe as a top of the fleet or an image truck and show people that, you know, they support Volvo.
Yeah, or to motivate the drivers as well.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a special way of showing the gratefulness. But do you see, of course, it's difficult when the race takes place during 9 months out of 12, and it's difficult to see that, is there any correlation that during the race times people are more talking, maybe let's say so, that more talking with the sales guys, not only about how to participate in the race or how to visit the race, but also about the cars? Or is it such a long period that you don't see any difference? It's the same throughout the year?
No, I think what we talked about before, to have a platform where you can build relationships, it gives them a reason to contact customers, you know, more
true.
Than normal. So you know, they can talk about, have you seen this or have you seen that? Or would you like to go to Newport, for instance? I mean, mind you, we don't pay for their trips or anything. They often pay themselves. It varies a little bit from country to country. But for instance, in all of Scandinavia, they pay for their own trips. So they want to come and spend that time with us. It's not as though we you know, just invite them and say, come along for the trip. It is a business event. And we're also very, very mindful of having business seminars included in their programs. For instance, talking about our core values. And we have our core value specialists here that have come along to all our stopovers and spoken about their subjects. So it's and that in our surveys now have scored the highest results of all, actually.
The business part.
Yes.
Wow.
Mm. So they are very interested in that.
How does the race and the stopovers influence sales in the regions?
For instance, in China, we've been quite active with the Volvo Ocean Race, and we've had the Volvo China Open and the World Golf Challenge in China. China is a market that's generally, the truck market is not increasing at the moment. It's actually going backwards a little bit. But Volvo is, we are strengthening our grasp of the market and increasing our market share. So it's very, I mean, there's so many factors involved when, you know, to talk, when people buy a truck or choose a truck and so on. But the main thing is that people have your name on their lips so that you're noticed. And obviously it gives us a very good image that we participate in those sort of events, and that we, for instance, in China, are contributing to developing sailing amongst young people, not Volvo trucks as such, but Volvo Ocean Races.
Does the race help you to, let's say, differentiate your from the local strong competitors as well? Because with the international ones, you are probably having kind of fairly global competition, and the international competitors are the same all over the world. But in China, is the market situation different? And does it give you an additional advantage to have the race there?
I mean, our international competitors, or the big competitors, are, you know, they're the same everywhere nearly, because, I mean, often if you look at the local Chinese brands, we are not a competitor to them. We are, you know, we are a totally different type of truck, much more high value type of truck.
Yeah.
So you probably wouldn't choose between a local Chinese made truck and a Volvo, you know, because we're quite different. It would be a conscious decision to go for an international brand, I think. And of those brands, obviously, we want to be top of mind.
Okay, so the race helps you differentiate from the global brands in
yes.
China as well?
Yes, yes.
Okay. As I understand, how many years have you been in China with the race? This year was the first time when you had the Chinese team competing, but before you had always the stops in China as well.
It's the third time, actually. We had Qingdao in 2008-09, and then Sanya has been participating in two races now. And we did have a Chinese boat last time too, called Sanya.
Okay, okay.
So it's the second time, yeah.
But as I understand, the visibility has increased a lot when you brought in the Chinese team compared with a time when you didn't have them participating or competing.
Well, China is a very big market.
Of course it is, yeah.
So, I mean, if you start marketing in China, you get a lot of viewers immediately, you know, because it's such an enormous market, you know, compared to say, the European countries. So obviously the you know, the people who've seen the products go up a lot.
Yeah, yeah. But I wanted to reach to the part that asking that from day one when you started in a new market, let's say it's China, having a race there, how many years would it take for you to see the kind of the major difference in sales? Of course, you get the visibility from the first day, but in sales and the kind of the image improvement, how many years would it take?
I think it is difficult to judge that. I mean, from one thing alone, as I said before, you know, there are so many parameters when it comes to sales. But we know that China, the Asian markets use Volvo Ocean Race a lot. They send a lot of customers to other stopovers. For instance, Auckland, we had a lot this time, and last time they sent them to Sweden and so on. They also use it a lot locally. So we know that they are very, very happy to have Volvo Ocean Race on board, and then they utilize it a lot. And they do it for the image, because we are different from other manufacturers. But it's very, very difficult to judge exactly how long it would take from A to Z. Actually.
Yeah, but it's years, not months, isn't it?
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
But do you see, with such a global race, do you see any differences in different markets? For instance, how you need to build up the event in order to maximize the results for you? Or is it the same, not depending on the part where it on the port where it is?
We have to just to explain that there are quite a few parties involved in having a stopover. There is a host, which, say, for instance, could be, well, Sanya, for instance, in China is the host. They are then responsible for the local marketing of the event as such.
Okay.
You know, to get the general public there. The Volvo Ocean Race Organization that do the sailing, you know, that look after all the components related to the sailing and the syndicates and the boats and so on, they have, you know, they have a very major media activities, you know, when it comes to social media, internet, the app, the films. I mean, they have daily activities, but they don't necessarily promote one stopover over another. They're just saying, well, I mean, next they're coming to Sanya or next they're coming to Newport. So it's the actual local marketing to the general public is very much up to the local stopover organization. But then we, of course, market to our customers the stopover, you know, that they should visit the stopover, and we invite them to the stopover and so on. So there are lots of, and then Volvo Cars will do the same with their customers and Volvo Construction Equipment and so on. So there's so many parties involved in this.
But in general, are you happy that the event is a bit different in all of the stopovers, in all the stopovers? Or would you like to have it more like unified, that this is the event how it should be?
No, the event is very similar. I mean, for instance, the Volvo Pavilion is exactly the same in every country. Some syndicates may choose to display their products in some stopovers and not all of them, depending on whether it's a big market for them or not. For instance, the Swedish company SCA had very large displays all over the world in all the stopovers, but they had different angles depending on where they were. So there's certain parameters that every stopover has to meet, so it's not really that different. And we had a Chinese entry, we had Dongfeng enter the race this time, and they also had a pavilion at every stopover with performers and so on. No, generally it's quite similar in all the stopovers.
Okay. How do you choose the stopovers? You have changed them during the races. Do you have any competition between the places, or are you deciding based on some factors?
Actually, it's like a bidding process. It's almost the same as for an Olympic event. And here, the Volvo Ocean Race Organization have talked to these cities. I can tell you that last time we had 82 cities that were interested in hosting the Volvo Ocean Race.
Wow.
But there are a lot of parameters that have to be completed. For instance, the infrastructure, the hotels, you know, the depth of the harbour, the ability of having the sailboats there, exhibition areas, receiving organisation, and so on. There are lots and lots of different aspects. So that work starts many, many years before the actual stopover happens.
Of course. But are you in general wanting to have new stopovers every year, or are you keeping like everything that works, don't touch them, and just chasing the ones that need to be replaced?
I think a bit of both. It's nice to have some that we know work very well. And for instance, places like Auckland, you know, it's a city of sails. They love sailing. We've been there now twice and it works very, very well. But it's also interesting, particularly from our point of view, from our customers' point of view, to have some new places to go to as well. So a bit of both. We would like to include more stopovers.
Okay. But if you have to make a choice, would you prefer a city that is really a sailing city, that would enjoy the race most, the stopover most? Or would you prefer a country where you need to promote Volvo? And maybe the stopover is not so much about sailing, at you, but you see that there is a future potential.
No, I think we need the sailing component very much so. We have a say, of course. We talk to Volvo Ocean Race about the ports that they choose. They all have to be Volvo markets, otherwise there's no point. No, the sailing is very important. I mean, China was a bit different because that was a new developing market for sailing. And the people that started the syndicate, they committed to teach a number of people how to sail. And they did a very, very big job on teaching people. They sort of said that these guys practically didn't know the back from the front of a boat, 2 years ago, and now they sail around the world because they wanted to start up this sport in China. So that was very unique, to do that. But apart from that, a lot of sailors come back to the race every time.
It's excellent. During such a long race, you create a lot of content, and it's always good to have some fresh content, good emotions, wonderful pictures, what you get from the races to use in media. But how to use the content efficiently? And I mean that, can you share some secrets? How do you use the content in your marketing? So it's not only marketing of the race, but also marketing of Volvo trucks or Volvo buses or Volvo Penta or whoever you have in the group.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the most obvious one for us is, of course, by designing a special Volvo Ocean Race Edition truck with its own livery and color and inclusions and so on, because they serve as rolling advertisements on the roads. For many years. And for instance, I still see trucks from the 05-06 race rolling on the roads, and they still show Volvo Ocean Race, so they advertise it. But we have natural connections too. And for instance, this time the yachts were built, the components were built in three different countries, and we used Volvo trucks to transport the parts. And they are very large, it could be a hull or a deck. So those transports needed special permits, road permits. They only could be freighted overnight, and they had to have special vehicles, to go before and after them. And we did films relating to those transports that we could that we broadcast on YouTube, both Volvo Ocean Race Organization and our own channels. But apart from those obvious product ones, we talk about our core values in relation to the race. For instance, we can talk about the safety measures that Volvo has introduced on the yachts, and which now are mandatory. One example is that the bulb of the boats, they have to be painted orange. That was not a requirement before, and that is in case a boat turns over, an orange bulb is much easier to see than any other color.
Of course.
So it makes it easier to find from an aircraft or a helicopter, for instance. And so there are lots of safety features that Volvo has introduced. And we have, they have an advanced satellite tracking system so we can constantly monitor where the yachts are from the operations room at Volvo Ocean Race. And that, again, did not happen before. We have made the race much safer. But we can talk about other things, like we have joint values like endurance or teamwork, design, leading-edge technology, all those things we can draw correlations between our products and the Volvo Ocean Race. So that this, you just have to think about it a little bit, and you find that there are a lot of similarities that we can use for content marketing.
How do you build your content marketing calendar? Is it very active during the 9 months, and then you have some break or some vacation to prepare a new race, or are you dividing the topics throughout the year? You this May we are going to talk about safety, and in June we are going to talk about teamwork. How is it?
Yes, I mean, together with Volvo Ocean Race, they make a calendar which issues they're going to promote, you know, each month. Before the race, 2 years ago, we sat down and they did a communication platform. So then we look at theirs and see where it sort of corresponds to our own program, you could say. But it does vary a little bit. And of course, with content being available, different markets may choose to use it at different times. You know, the local market may choose to use the transport through Italy, for instance, whenever they've, you know, whenever it suits them. So we're not really tied down to a schedule.
Okay, so you have a general calendar, and then every market can build up their own calendar based on the local events, but also looking at the general calendar.
Yeah, well, the Volvo Ocean Race has a general calendar. We put content in.
Okay, very interesting. Because I know that it's always difficult. You can have a lot of content, and then it's difficult to tie it into your marketing process. So whether it will really pay off at the end of the day, not just beautiful pictures.
Yeah, we have a lot of customer magazines, both online and some. I don't know actually if there are too many printed anymore, but there used to be. So we use social media a lot, you know, and digital marketing tools.
Okay.
And films we use. I mean, we use a lot of films where, for instance, we have a film of this transport in conjunction with some sailing footage. And then, for instance, a Volvo dealer may have that in his waiting room, you know, when people come in to have their trucks serviced or pick up their trucks. We can have that sort of content rolling on the screens in there, you know, to create a bit of interest. So it's lots of different areas.
Very good. If you now try to kind of wrap the discussion or the interview, then what would be the your suggestions? Let's say that we would have one Estonian company or maybe several of them thinking about that. What should we do with the sponsorship? What should they learn from you?
Well, I think it takes a lot longer to plan an event when you're dealing with different countries and continents than it would a local event. I mean, we start 2 years before each race starts by doing site inspections, create network, do conferences, plan exhibitions. So there's a very long lead time, and then you might find that when 2 years are up, you might find that new people have started on those roles, so that you have to start the process all over again. So time is of the essence. It's not something you should do everything like that. You should do long term. There's no point in going into an event short term if you want it to have an impact. Communication is key. We for the event, we have created a number of websites, booking systems, our own internal communication system, so that everyone knows what's available and what's going on, because as you can appreciate, there are a lot of people involved in a big sponsorship like this. And then another thing that's very important is brand and communication guidelines, so that all the local markets communicate the same way we do, and that the identity carriers look the same everywhere we go. Because for us, brand consistency is extremely important. I think to make sure that all the communication looks the same is absolutely key to make it have an impact.
Very good, thank you. It's really good to learn from you and not to make the same mistake by ourselves. And the last question from this part is from a bit different field. What do you think, how would sponsorship be used to market a creative business?
Well, one very creative way of using sponsorship was when the film Pirates of the Caribbean, the second film, when it was going to be launched in the US, they actually created a syndicate carrying that name and entered the yacht into the Volvo Ocean Race. And they chose, yeah, they chose the famous America's Cup sailor, Paul Kayard, as a skipper. And in every stopover, they had special pirates activities for the general public. And they marketed the launch of the film in every country. So that was, of course, a very, very, very worldwide, very expensive way of launching a film. But it was also very novel and very, very creative, I thought.
Turundusuudised. Now, news come from Euromonitor. And Euromonitor for this week comments that the interest is increasing in cross-cultural marketing. And it means that this is an idea of adopting a cross-cultural approach, targeting similarities across all ethnic groups, for example, rather than creating approaches for each group in isolation. And they have brought out some examples of cross-cultural approach. It's about Coca-Cola's America is the Beautiful ad campaign, or Kimberly-Clark's Celebrate Family Unity, or PepsiCo cultural fluency approach. But on the other side, it's important in some markets and to the first generation of immigrants to stress still the heritage. For instance, a recent report cited that reaching blackconsumers.com, that 77% of black Americans indicated the heritage was an important part of who they are, compared with 58% of the general population. And there is an example about the L'Oreal's campaign that has acquired special, or not campaign, but an action that that they have acquired specialist companies in the beauty sector in order to be able to expand on the presence in the multicultural market, like the companies called Soft Sheen and Carol's Daughter in the US and Nili Cosméticos in Brazil. And the question here is that how much of this trend influences your global marketing in Volvo Trucks? Does it? Or if it does, then how is it?
Well, we are not a consumer-based company, as you know, so our marketing is quite different from B2B. But we actually have an approach that we are Swedish. We really believe in promoting our Scandinavian heritage, as do Volvo Cars. You may have seen, you know, the Zlatan commercials and so on. We believe that our brand has is anchored in our Swedish heritage. So we've actually even created virals that play on our a bit, you know, actually make jokes of our Swedishness and our cultural differences and so on. But at the same time, we've done more international type, more interesting maybe for the people all over the world, like the Epic Split. You know, you probably know the viral, the Epic Split, where Jean-Claude Van Damme. So we try to do a little bit of everything, but we really are very, all our brand platforms are based in the Scandinavian heritage.
It's I picked the news because it's important discussions also in Estonia going on about amount of immigrants we could adopt in have in Estonia, and we have a big minority, a Russian minority in Estonia, and it seems to be that there are two different markets. Estonia is one of them, and Estonian Russians are the other one. But of course, many of the companies try to do different marketing. But of course, we see also that the problem is that that most of the Estonian Russians speak Estonian very well and understand all the communication. For them, it's a bit weird to see one message in Estonian and the other completely different one in Russian. So there are kind of challenges for Estonian companies, but what I liked also in the comment was that it's not only the heritage that is important. It's about education, about values, about behavior, all the other things also that need to be that we need to pay attention to. Not only just the color of the skin or other things.
I think today the people travel a lot, and with the introduction of all the social media and so on, people see what happens around the world. And it always it's always interesting to see. I've traveled a lot through work, of course, and whether I go to Australia or to the US or to Cape Town, South Africa, and so on, you find that people, you find the same messages. You know, people are dressed in a very similar way. You know, fashion corresponds. You know, if you go into a department store where they sell cosmetics and so on, it's they're quite similar messages. Perhaps China is the one that is a little bit different. But I feel that everything is becoming very global. We have a saying, simply be, you should be as local as, you have to respect local habits and culture, of course, and have the greatest respect for that. But the messages are becoming more and more global, I think, today, because of people traveling so much and being able, if they can't travel physically, they can travel over, you know, on the World Wide Web.
Yeah, and I think that one trend also that is supporting is we see here in Estonia a lot of startup companies. And the startups start looking the world globally from the birth, not from the third or fourth or tenth year in the market. So they adopt the global view at the beginning, and they manage well. Also, yes. not trying to differentiate for every market, but trying to more keep the values as you told that. Whatever the values for them are, they try to keep the values and build on that, not on the cultural differences in every country or every region.
Yes, you have to believe in the foundation of your brand, I think, and promote it like that.
And I think that the development of social media has helped a lot as well, that we use the same channels, despite on in which part of the world we are. What have you noticed? What has been special, and you think that is worth of awarding?
Well, I think Netflix, the big company Netflix, has just announced that it's starting an unlimited leave policy for new mothers and fathers for the first year after the birth or adoption of a child. So, as part of that new maternity and paternity policy, employees will receive their normal pay, and they'll be able to return to work part-time or full-time, and they may also return to work and take additional time off if needed. And, I mean, this is so unusual for the United States, where the most companies only give, like, 12 weeks maternity leave or paternity leave. And often it's unpaid leave. So this is a new way of recognizing how important the staff is, or the employees, and making sure that they keep them, and that people don't have to worry about their family situation when they have children, but can go back to work when they feel they're ready. I think it's fantastic. It's not a campaign, but it's a fantastic announcement.
I think it's very good. So how long is the maternity leave in Sweden usually?
Well, I must confess I don't have children of my own, but I think it's up. Mothers and fathers share it, and they can choose it, how long each parents have it. But I think it can be up to 18 months, but not all of that with full pay.
Okay. Because in Estonia it's the maternity leave, but it's full pay, by the way, is up to 18 months.
Oh, I think that's probably better than Sweden then. It's full pay, yeah.
But the problem is that you are almost not, let's say you are allowed to work, but you can work only small, kind of a smaller limited time during that time. And on the other side, it makes so that the mother's at home about 18 months, and then it's difficult to return. Because they have been away such a long time, and that's why I think that when you talk the Netflix, that that it's very important that you can return when you need, and then you can be some time at home. So it's not so strict either at home or at work, but there has to be in the kind of middle way as well.
Yeah, and I imagine a company like Netflix that everything moves so quickly in terms of technology that you probably need to keep up to date a little bit on what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's a really good candidate. My candidate for this week, we had several. Usually it's rather difficult to find a good candidate, but this week during in Estonia it was happening very many things. But what I wanted to point out is Arvamus Festival in Estonian. In English it's probably opinion festival or something. I don't find I don't know how they translate it to English. In Swedish, as we discussed here before, it was like Almedalsfestivalen, that has here in Estonia taken place for third time. The first year they had about 2,000 visitors. Second year it was about 4,000, and this year they reported that they had about 10,000 visitors.
Wow.
And it was really, I happened to be one of them. I hadn't had time during the previous years, but this year I was there, and I was really surprised how high level it was. Estonian ministries, politicians, business leaders, journalists, and really kind of fruitful discussions. And it was really a good atmosphere, so I really hope that that we learn the art of discussion and discussing about our different opinions in during this event.
It's all about communication, isn't
Yeah, absolutely.
and understanding.
Yeah. We have the candidates. What do you think about? Have you been participating in the Almedalsfestivalen?
Almedalsveckan, I think we call it.
Almedalsveckan.
No, I'm afraid I haven't. It takes place in Gotland, in Visby, and accommodation and so on is always very, very scarce. So we always have someone from Volvo
Okay.
attending. Generally, people from public affairs or always our director of environment, our core value specialist on environment, because they pick up the discussion from the politicians, what the trends are. So that's very valuable. And they always report back, but unfortunately, I haven't been able to go myself.
Okay, okay. So at least I'm very happy that the team here in Estonia started this type of event, and I'm also happy that there are so many participants this year. So because when it's kind of 1,000 to 2,000, you cannot influence a lot, but now with already 10,000 participants, it's already something, I think.
Absolutely. That's
So, but
fantastic.
Christina, do you know what happens now? Now we need to make a choice, and you are the one who can say who will win the award. We have the two candidates, and it's okay to vote for yours, I have to say. So, what do you think?
Well, they're very, very different, aren't they?
I know.
Well, I mean, Almedalsveckan, I think being a very important forum here in Sweden and has been for years, I think. And I believe very much in communication between different sides of, so you can discuss different sides of a story. So I think I need to, I will have let you
Have the final
let
word.
the win. Yeah, I think maybe yours will win because that sounds very, very interesting. And we need to talk to each other. Everyone needs to talk to each other. We need to understand each other's viewpoints. So I'm all for that.
Okay. Yeah, it's a difficult choice because looking at what Netflix does, I think it's an important message. And especially when you say that in US markets, it's very unusual to market a company that way and to attract the young talent. And I think that for their target group, it's extremely important to have the freedom to have both job and kids at the same time. So that's why I think that they could be a trendsetter. But on the other side, if I look at about the Opinions Festival in here, I think that they are, have already created something, so that people are following. There are more and more people coming and trying to discuss and showing their opinion. So maybe also if I look at these sites, so that maybe let's give the award to the Estonian Opinion Festival. War?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. It's so different.
Yeah, it is so different. Absolutely.
Turundusdoktor aitab.
Today's case study sounds like that. I am a marketing manager in a small publisher. We publish several magazines targeted to women and kids. Our sales director has an idea to hold a sales event for the smaller loyal customers in order to present them new special packages. He is very goal-oriented and wants the clients to sign the contracts during the event. I am a bit afraid that the event might be too pushy and scare off some customers. What do you suggest is the question.
I think what I would do is to present the package at the event and then be very careful with my follow-up, you know, to make sure that everyone... that you have everybody's email addresses and phone numbers. And then within a couple of days after the event, I would contact them and ask them to commit.
So that you will give them enough time that they can really think about the offer, not just sign there.
Yes, exactly. That's it always annoys me with telephone salesmen that they want you to sign immediately. And I always say no. Whereas if they'd given me a day or two to think about it, I might actually think about it and say, yes, I think, yes, definitely. I don't like pushy salesmen myself or salespeople, but I would definitely, if I like the product, I would definitely commit afterwards. Okay.
For me, it was the same way that I felt that for me, it would be probably also too pushy. Maybe it's also depending on the target groups. If they are targeting the marketing managers in smaller companies who are bombarded with different offers every single day, with better deals and more discounts, then it might be that it's difficult to get them to sign at the event. But I think that that maybe they should also consider to kind of connect the event with some other things. Maybe they should do some, I don't know, some charity project at the event or something that will really give a different background. So it's not only a pushy sales event, but something more that will bring the emotions up, and then it's also easier to look at the deal, and maybe they see that there is not only the benefits for them with a discount, but also someone else would benefit from the event.
That's a very nice thought, yeah.
Do you sign contracts at Volvo Ocean Race stopovers? Do you have the kind of the habit to do it, or do you say usually that no, this is not the place for this kind of direct business?
Oh, you mean sales? No, I... It could be, sorry, that might be local. You know, I think that changes a lot. For instance, I know at track exhibitions in Brazil, for instance, they sign a lot of deals at the exhibition. And they will always say after the show that we have signed, you know, 200, 500, 800 trucks, whatever. Whereas I think here in Sweden, we don't have any large international exhibitions at the moment, but it's not so common. I think people tend to follow up more. So it may be that in Brazil they sign straight away, but not generally. We don't want this. We don't go in and talk business too much at that time. The feeling is that they should get used to the company. They to create good relationships between the salespeople and the customers, which you can then build upon.
Very good. I think it's a very good suggestion that use the event for relationship building. Don't scare them off. Give them enough time to think about a good deal, and you have a long-term relationship, and they will come back next year as well.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what we try to do.
Yeah. Even if you don't have the Volvo Ocean Race at the event, you have something different, but still.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, you can always find something.
Very good. Thank you, Christina. It was so interesting to hear you. Thank you for being with us. And dear listeners, please listen us again in a week's time. Meanwhile, please send us interesting case studies. You know that that we really love to solve them.
Sulle meeldis Turundusraadio. Teili endale meeldetuletus järgmiste saadete kohta Marketingi Instituudi kodulehelt.